today we're in the second of our sermon series, The Question of Jesus. And I think some of us usually have a lot of questions about this faith, about different aspects of this faith. But it turns out not only we have questions, but Jesus has questions for us too. And a lot of times when Jesus asks those questions, it's a very pointed question. It's a question with a purpose. Sometimes it's not really meant for you to answer them, but it's meant to challenge you to follow him and live out the faith that he has shown. And we're going to look at a question today. But before we do that, I just want to share a little about myself. And I'm going to be super vulnerable with you today. So I just want to let you know a secret that I've been kept in myself for a long time. And the reason why I don't tell people this is because I'm a little ashamed of it, to be honest. And so it takes for me a lot of courage to let you know. And I just ask that you kindly don't judge, and that you just receive it with love and with compassion for my little soul. Here's my secret. I'm 25 years old, and I haven't yet figured out how to swim. Don't judge. I'm afraid of the waters. I'm afraid of the water. I'm afraid of drowning. I'm afraid of a lot of things ever since young, but I'm afraid of swimming. I'm afraid of waters. I'm afraid of drowning. And for some of you, it might not bother you because, okay, I didn't take lessons anyway, so I don't need to swim. I'm not a fish. You know, it doesn't matter to you. But it actually bothers me a lot. And I'll tell you two reasons. The first reason is because I actually love the waters. If you ask me, hey, Carson, if you can be any animal, what would you be? I would tell you first thing up, a fish, maybe a bigger one. Because I love the ocean. I like to go down and see what's going on. I spend sometimes in a rare occasion, I spend a lot of my hours watching documentaries, you know, National Geographic, on what happens underneath. I'm very interested. And it's a shame that I can't swim. So I can't, like, dive down. I can't do scuba. I can't do any of that stuff. I can't swim. So that's the first reason it bothers me a lot. Second reason why it bothers me so much is because I don't know how to swim because it's not because I didn't take any lessons. I did take a lot of lessons. In fact, a good couple of years of lessons. Don't judge. Don't judge. There's only love in this community. Ever since when I was at grade 5, grade 4, my mom already knew that I needed to know how to swim. Or I guess our parents wanted to develop me. So ever since I was elementary, I've been in swimming lessons ever since. And when I got here to Richmond or to Vancouver in like grade 7, I kept taking lessons. And then up until maybe it must have been like grade 9 or grade 10. So I've had at least 5 to 6 years of swimming lessons, to be honest with you. I never figured out how. I was just so afraid all the time that I would drown that I just can't let go, you know, of the edge, of the instructor, of the floating thingy. I just can't. And it was gotten so bad that when I got to hear my swimming lessons, I would take the swimming lessons with kids about this tall. And the water would like go above their head and they don't care. They're like frogs and they just swim all the way. And I'm like, I'm drowning. So right now, my swimming ability is one stroke. Not one stroke. It is the amount of strokes I can do in one breath. Because I have never mastered that thing. So I can only do it. So if I fall down to the water, I can do as many strokes as I can with one breath, and then I'll probably die. So hopefully when my boat crashed or if I get on the boat, I can land somewhere close to the shore. And it was bad, right? Like a grown man, like I was a little big guy, right? You don't know how to swim, come on, you're scared. And so I tell my parents, I don't want to go to swimming. I don't want to go. It's too shameful. The little kids are better than me. And I would keep telling my parents, I don't want to do, I'm afraid, I don't want to do lessons. And my dad would just keep telling me. And my dad's always like this. He kept saying, just keep going. Just keep going. It's good for you. Just don't give up so easily. My dad's always the one that pushes me to do these kind of things, to do the things I'm afraid of, to do the things that I'm not comfortable doing. And I have a lot of those. My dad's always the one that pushed me to go. And I never really understood. But I had a little bit of an epiphany into why he does that kind of thing last year in 2019 in summer. I went on a short trip with Howard and with Fizz and with her family. We went to Kelowna, and when we lived by the Okanagan Lake, and that's the Okanagan Lake. And throughout the trip, you know, as we're driving down, I just heard Fizz's family and cousins say that, you know, we're going to do water sports. There's nothing to do, so we better do some water sports at the lake. And I overheard them, and I was driving, and I'm like, no, don't do water sports. I can't swim. And then we ended up, they voted on paddle boarding. And then you tell me, right, Carson, you don't have to swim in paddle boarding. But I tell you this, you can fall in paddle boarding. And the best part of this is stand-up paddle boarding. Stand-up paddle boarding. I've never done it. But you know, my height, I have a higher center of gravity. And when a person has a higher center of gravity, standing on a platform that is not rested on a solid ground, what tends to happen is you tend to fall. And so I thought, I don't want to go. But of course, you know, being me, I'm a more mature human being. I'm the older of all the cousins, and I didn't let them know that, of course. But I was struggling. I was struggling all the time. And when we got to there, I decided, okay, Carson, this is the time. You got to really man up. You got to really man up at this point. Because your girlfriend's here. Your girlfriend's brother is here. Your girlfriend's cousins are here. Your girlfriend's parents are here. Your girlfriend's parents, brothers, and sisters, everybody's here. This is the last moment you want to go and chicken out on a thing. Paddleboarding, come on. I told myself, you got to man up. So I did what any man would do. I sat on the beach. I couldn't do it. I told them I had excuses. I call them valid reasons. Because you see, one paddleboard holds two person, two paddleboard holds four people. And we have five people. And it doesn't make sense to rent the third one for just one person. So what you do is I as a servant that I am, as a humble servant that I am, I very graciously offered my opportunity to do paddleboarding to the younger cousins and brothers and sisters. I, you know, mature human being, I offered up, you know, giving to the youngers, you know. And the second valid reason is because somebody's got to look after the stuff. You know, the parents are all gone to shopping, right? They didn't paddleboard. So I looked after the stuff. So this is a picture that I took when I was sitting on the bench. And if you look very closely, just at the bottom right corner over there, you will see all the cousins over there getting ready. And I was just reading my book. We got 45 minutes of rental. I mean, it takes longer than 45 minutes to get across the lake. So it's no problem. So they won't come back before the rental ends. And then there's no second go. And then we're done. They came back in 20 minutes. And at that point, I realized you got to really go. Because Fizz was asking me. Now, when your girlfriend asks you to go paddleboarding, when you do, you as a man, you simply cannot say no in these kind of challenges. So, okay, you got to really man up. But I think the deeper epiphany that I had is when I was standing there reading and looking at the whole lake and stuff, I realized that if I don't go now, I will probably miss my chance. When's the next time I'm ever going to go to Kelowna, to Okanagan Lake, and decide to do paddleboarding? Probably maybe once or maybe never. And I told myself, okay, if I don't go now, maybe I never get a chance. And I don't want to end this trip telling myself, oh, I should have done this. I don't want to end this trip telling myself, oh, I should have gone. And so I went. You see, I didn't stand up. Because it keeps your center of gravity a little lower. But I went. I wonder if this is something that you repeat to yourself often. Something that you should have done. Something that I should have done. I should have done something. I should have done something. Or maybe it's the opposite. I shouldn't have done something. Maybe it's in the area of relationship. I should have gone out. Or I shouldn't have gone out. I should have stayed the night. I should have asked her out. I shouldn't have asked her out. I shouldn't have said yes. I should have said yes. I should have. Or maybe you're older, you're a little older, and you have a career and you have a family already, so the relationship thing isn't too much of a problem. But maybe your I should have moment has to do with investments. Because some of your friends have told you should invest in this, and you didn't. And you keep seeing his investments go like it's going to climb again and again and again. And and you're in your heart, you go, oh, it's going to drop soon. It's going to drop soon. And it's just keep going up and up and up. And for you, you don't do risky investments. You're not a risk taker, so you don't. And then now you're beating yourself down because you say, if I have invested in Amazon, if I've invested just $1,000 in 1997, it's going to turn out to be $1,341,000 at this point. I should have invested. I should have is a very powerful statement. And if it keeps coming back to you, it's going to destroy you. It's going to really haunt your life because it brings back all that nasty missed opportunity and all those things back up into the surface. And you look at them and you go, I should have done this. Now, I'm not here to give you a TED talk. I'm not here to give you like a self-help talk. While there are good news, there is good news and there is help in our faith about regrets. But that's not the point that I want to make. I want to draw out something a little bit more important. And so I want to let you know that in the area of faith, there is a possibility that we will look back at the end of our life and we'll look back and tell ourselves, I should have done this in faith. And this is so significant because in every other area of life, the missed opportunity only really affects that area of life. But in faith, it affects everything else. Because what you believe about yourself, about God, and ultimately that, all this thing about your faith will ultimately affect your whole being and your whole life. And if you have a missed moment, missed opportunity, something you didn't do, something you should have done in faith, it's going to really affect everything else in your life. And so it matters a lot if you don't have these kind of I should have moments in your faith journey. And as an example, I want to take a passage that we're going to read today from the Gospel of Matthew. The Gospel of Matthew is, of course, written by Matthew. Matthew was one of the 12 disciples of Jesus. Yeah? Matthew, disciples meaning just he's just one of the closest persons to Jesus' follower group. He follows Jesus around, hears his teaching, you know, watches and sees all the miracles that he does, and he knows firsthand what Jesus can do, what Jesus is here to do, and what Jesus will do. And so Matthew experienced all these things. 20 years later, after Jesus died and resurrected and went back to heaven, Matthew sat down and recorded what happened and what he remembered Jesus to be. And so we have a gospel writer, Matthew, and I think, personally speaking, I think he has had some I should have moments. Because if I was Matthew, I think it must have felt a little something like this. I remember that night on the boat. It was unbelievable. You know, we just fed 5,000 people with just little bread and fish, and the crowd was going crazy about Jesus. And they were cheering and applauding. And at that moment, for some reason, Jesus pushed us back to the boat. And he told us, go to the other side of the sea. And he said, he'll meet us there. And I didn't understand back then, why isn't Jesus coming with us? Why do we have to go so quickly? The crowds was just getting started. The crowd was just getting excited about Jesus. They wanted to crown Jesus as king. Anyway, I didn't understand, but we went to the boat and we started to sail away. And when I looked back, I saw Jesus back on the shore and he said something to the crowd and he dismissed them. And I didn't quite see what he was doing afterwards. But I think he told us after that he went up to the mountain to keep praying. So we're sailing on the boat and Peter and Andrew, one of the 12, Peter and Andrew, they're fishermen. So they're well accustomed to the sea and they know how to sail. So they took turns sailing, and while some of us, it's been a long day. We took a nap. And I think I must have woken up a few hours later because it was getting really loud and the wind was very strong. And we were having some tremendous difficulty getting the boat to go, to move. And now I didn't think we were in trouble because I think Peter and Andrew, they got this. They're very experienced fishermen. They've seen this kind of thing before. And they seem to be pretty calm. But they also seem to be very tired. And they told us that because the wind was going so strong against us that we weren't making any ground. And in other words, we were stuck. And some of us asked, where is Jesus? You know, it's been a long time now. Where is Jesus? Is he going to come? Is he going to come back onto the boat? Or how is he ever going to get across this mess here? And then someone on the boat, I don't remember who, someone on the boat just yelled out something. And he just screamed and he said he saw something moving on the sea. He said, there is a ghost. There's a ghost over there. There's a ghost coming on the sea. And I was so scared because the situation was already pretty bad. And there are legends in the sea that there's spirit in the sea. And if the storm was strong and if the wind was blowing, it means that the spirits in the sea are coming out to cause trouble. And we're all terrified. And all 12 of us, we held onto each other and we just looked at that ghost thing. And then we heard him. It was Jesus. Jesus said to us, take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid. So it was Jesus walking on the sea? I didn't really believe it at that time, but Peter, he just ditched the sails and he was supposed to be in control of the sail. He just left and he went to the side of the boat to take a look and he leaned over the edge and he screamed something. And I didn't really believe what he said, but he said, Lord, if it's you, command me to come to you on the water. And I went and I held on to him. You're crazy. You can't walk on water. You don't have miracle power. That's Jesus. That's some other guy. You cannot go. And I was just holding on to him and Peter wasn't even listening. Peter was going, Lord, if it's you, Lord, if it's you, command me to come to you on the water. And we heard the voice again. Come. And Peter did something unthinkable. I tried to stop him. I think we all tried to stop him because we knew that he was crazy. It was as if he was possessed. He was crazy. He didn't listen to anybody. He just went. And he held onto the side of the boat. And he lifted one leg over. And he's still holding on. And then he tried to put the other leg over. And I was holding his arms. I was like, hey, Peter, don't, whatever you do, don't let go. Don't let, this is not the place you want to be. This is not the place you want to do miracles and exercise your faith. You're going to sink. Don't let go. And his hands are still holding onto the edge of the boat. And then he turned around and he looked at Jesus and he let go. And he stood. He stood on water. He didn't move. He didn't flinch. He didn't float. He wasn't floating. He was just standing there. And I saw him took a step. I don't even know what he's stepping on right now. I don't think he knows what he's stepping on. He isn't even looking at his feet. He's just going. And he took one step, and his other step, and another step. I tried to call him. I tried, yo, Peter, you should come back right now. And I tried to call him. I tried to call him, but my voice gave up on me. We were speechless. All 11 of us, we were speechless. And it lasted for a little bit. He walked a couple of steps around the middle between the boat and Jesus. And all of a sudden, he fell. He said, ah, Lord, save me, save me. And he started to sink. And we all cried, Peter, Peter. And I turned around, and I went to grab a rope or grab something. And the next thing I saw when I turned back is Jesus already had him up by the arms. And it looked like Jesus was telling him something. And then they both walked back to the boat. And the wind stopped. And that was the quietest moment I've ever been in my life. I've never heard a sea so quiet. We could all hear our hearts pumping and the water dripping down from Peter's clothes. And we all just fell down in fear. This is the Son of God. And a few days later, we had a little bit of a rest time. So I caught up with Peter and I asked him, hey, Peter, what's up with that whole, you know, water walking thing? What did Jesus tell you? And Peter gave his big smile and he was a little shy. Maybe he was a little ashamed about it. He told me, for a moment, I thought I was gone. You know, I stared at Jesus, but then I looked at the waves and I looked at the wind, and I was really afraid. And then all of a sudden, my feet gave up, and I was sinking. And I drank, you know, a lot of water, and I was doing that. And I felt, all of a sudden, I felt a thrust from my arms, and Jesus pulled me up from the sea, and he just smiled at me. And he said, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? And I finished chatting with Peter a little bit, and I went to bed. And as I went to bed, I can't help but keep thinking about that line. Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? It's as if Jesus was talking to me. Oh, you of little faith, why did I know I doubted? I know, maybe I should have went. I should have asked and I should have prayed. I should have gone out. If I knew who Jesus was back then, I would have gone. I would have gone, Jesus, but I doubted. I doubted. I don't have enough faith. I should have gone. Do you want to walk on water? Do you want to try to follow this faith so intently that when you look back, you won't see any missed opportunities? Do you want to get to the end of your life and be content with what you did in your faith, and you don't have to say any, I should have, I should have, I should have? And if that's you, I want to let you know you have good news, because you got the rest of your life. Experience Jesus. Why not make the most of your life following him, stepping out in faith and walking on water and experiencing his miracles? And the good news is the water walking thing. It's a daily thing. You can do that daily. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that in just a second. But I want to tell you another perspective of that story. So we had Matthew's perspective. Study with me a little bit. What's Jesus' perspective? If you're Jesus, you're walking on water as you do normally. You walk on water after you've done your meal. And you walk on water and you get to the boat and you know your followers are there. And there's this crazy guy. There's this crazy dude. He's always been crazy about your faith, about you. And he's always said some weird stuff. And this crazy guy, Peter, just like, Lord, if it's you, command me to come out on the water. What would you do if you're Jesus? Think about that for a second. Maybe if I were Jesus, I would tell Peter, sit down. Sit down, son. Don't say this again. Don't try weird stuff. Don't try random stuff. This is dangerous. Just watch me and I'll just calm. I got this under control. And I'll just calm the sea right there. Maybe that's me. You know, because if you think about it, right, what does Peter walking on water accomplish for the gospel? What does Peter's walking on water, what does that do for the gospel? What does that do for God? Does that make more people believe in him? Does that make him more credible? It doesn't. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't accomplish anything in the plan of God, in the ministry, but it accomplishes something great in Peter. It establishes his faith, you know, it stretches him, strengthens him, and allows him to experience God himself. And so when Jesus heard Peter crying, Lord, if it's you, command me to come on. I think Jesus smiled a little bit, just like, you know, a father would to a kid. He said, come. And it's because of this command, not by Peter's power, that Peter was able to walk on water. And this is such a beautiful scene. I don't want you to miss this. Our God, with the heart of the Father, just like my Father encouraging me to do and stretch my faith and do courageous things, our God sees his children stepping out in faith and taking courage to dip in the water and trusting him and letting go, enjoying his presence. This is our God. He wants you to experience him by walking on water. So do you want to walk on water? And if you said yes, you will naturally ask this question. How do you walk on water? What does that even mean? Surely you don't mean, literally, I'm going to step out onto the Okanagan Lake. For our context, now I don't doubt that this thing can happen in the power of God. But for now, in our context, stepping out into the water and walking in water means taking a step of faith to follow Jesus. Taking a step of faith to follow Jesus. Taking a step of faith to follow Jesus. Because when you follow Jesus, you're gonna need some faith to step out a lot of the times. Because what Jesus teaches about his faith is pretty radical. So a lot of the times when you follow this God, you got to step out on the water. You got to take a step of faith and follow Jesus. So how do you do this practically? I'll try to get real practical here. I'll give you my 7 practical steps to walking on water. I'm going to publish a book very soon. 7 practical steps to walking on water. The first one is you have to identify your sea. Like, symbolically speaking, you have to identify your symbolic sea. Where are you trying to maneuver? What sea are you in? Maybe some of you is in the sea of career. You're stuck there and you don't know what's going on and you're stuck and you're lost. Maybe some of you is in a sea of relationship, unsure of the future, unsure of the present, unsure of anything, and don't know, stuck. Maybe some of you is in the sea of faith. You're getting comfortable with where you are sitting on the boat and you're a little stagnant. Not making any ground, but it doesn't seem like you mind and you're not going anywhere. You're just sort of floating in the sea of faith. What's your sea? And I tell you, if you're in any of the sea and you're stuck, that's good news for you. And you might think, why is that a good news when I'm stuck in the middle of the sea? Because it's very often the case that Jesus meets his children when they're stuck. If you just flip through the Bible, whenever God has an encounter with his children or his people, 99% of the time, I didn't do the math on it, 99% of the time, it's because they're stuck. They cried out to God, God, save me. And they encounter God. So identify the sea. If you're stuck, there's good news for you. Second step, identify your boat. What's your boat? If you're in a sea, you ought to be in a boat. Your boat is your safety net, your comfort zone. It's the thing that you're holding on to and you don't want to get out of. It's most of the time we call it, the comfort zone. That's what we call it. What's the place, what's the thing that makes you most unwilling to change? Is it financial security of your career that makes you afraid to step out? Or is it the stability of a relationship that makes you afraid to do the right thing? Or is it tardiness, laziness, the unwillingness to do anything that's stopping you from experiencing more of God? What's your boat? What's the thing that's holding you back from change? What's the hindrance that's holding you back? Identify the sea and find out what the boat is. Third step, find Jesus. Where's Jesus in this picture? And I mean specifically, what does God say about your situation right now? And if you don't know what God says about the situation, you can do a couple of things. Either you come every single Sunday and hope a sermon series will relate to your situation. The second thing is you can go look in the Bible. The third thing is you can ask some pastors, spiritual mentors. You can ask them, what does God say about my situation? Where is Jesus in my sea? Find Jesus and ask him and pray, ask, Lord, can I come to you? Can I do the thing that you have told me to do? Fourth step. You got to position yourself. Because, hear me out here. Because if this is your boat, and you spent the rest of your life chilling like this on the boat, you're not going to be able to walk on water. This is the truth. You don't even know when a wave hit you. You don't even know when Jesus is here. You don't even know anything. If that's you on the boat, you can't walk on water. So you got to position yourself at a point where you're ready, just like Peter did. What Peter did is Peter went all the way to the edge here. Lord, if it's you, command me to come. He was ready. And how do you want to be ready? You want to position yourself to be ready. I tell you, spiritually speaking, prayer is the best thing you can do. Prayer is often the catalyst for a breakthrough. If you are in doubt, if you are stuck, if you need a breakthrough, if you need Jesus to come, pray. That will position your heart at the right place. Do the preparatory work, right? Do the calculate budget, talk to mentors, research career and job, practice your craft, get ready. You just get ready. You never know when an opportunity might come. And if you're in the area of faith that you want to break through, devotion is how you position yourself. Discipline, scripture reading. And all of a sudden, without even knowing it, you realize, oh, I am already stepping out onto the waters. Position yourself. That's the fourth thing. Fifth thing is simply just go. You just got to walk it. When Jesus calls you and you're out here, it doesn't matter how much preparatory work you do. If you don't come out, you're not going to be able to walk on water. You got to step out of the boat and just walk. And for some of you, that invitation is already given to you today. If you feel that prompting in you, it's not because I am prompting you. It's because God is prompting you. That's his command to you. Come. Come. Sixth step. Try not to doubt. It's very hard because Peter doubted himself. But we know, if we understand a little bit what doubt means, we can maybe help us. Doubt, in the original Greek language, it comes from two words. It comes from two, number two, and it comes from stance. As in, when you doubt, you have two stands taking at the same time. When you believe in Jesus, you're looking back into something else. And when you say, I want to commit to him in my career, in my finances, and you're always looking back to the other stands that you had. I want to make this relationship change because you know I know this is the right thing to do, and but you kept going back to it, Don't take two stands. That's how you help yourself. Try not to doubt. And of course, prayer. This is also where, if you have a company of water walking people, that will really help you. Seventh step. It's not so much a step, but a promise. It's that Jesus will save you. Now I got to say this with a caution. If you have obeyed his command and if you have received a calling from him to do the right thing and then you go out, even if doubt makes you sink, Jesus is going to save you, just like he did to Peter. Step number eight. I know I said seven steps, but step number eight I think is pretty important too. You got to rinse and repeat. Rinse yourself, dry yourself, you know, with towel, and then just go again. Because water walking in this day and age is not a one-time thing. It's very rarely a one-time thing. Most of the time, it's you get a little pond that you try to work on, and then a little lake that you try to work, and then a little ocean, and a little sea, and then now all of a sudden you're walking on the Pacific Ocean. It's a reoccurring, a little step at a time thing. So rinse and repeat and do it again. And there you go, seven steps. Eight steps. And I know this myself because I have had some opportunities to walk on water. And I'll tell you, I would never trade any of these experiences for anything else. And I want to just share with you one of the biggest moments of me walking on water, and it's related to my career. In 2011, I was just a piano player. I was like grade 11 high school. I was just a piano player. I took some courage and applied for music team. That's my little pawn. And then I was in the music team, and as a band member, I was serving in my position, and I tried to prepare the best set I could every single week. I tried. That's my positioning. And sooner or later, the band leaders tell me, hey, do you want to do some arrangements? Do you want to try to lead the band on your own? And I said, oh, God called me to come. Maybe I could go and try to take a step. And as I became a band leader, I tried working on the craft and preparing myself, and I tried to play a little guitar here, sing a little here. Piano's my first instrument, but I got to prepare myself, position myself. And then 2015, the pastor saw that I put in some effort in serving, and they wanted to give me an opportunity. They wanted to give me a chance to try. And so they gave me a job offer in this church. And from that point on, you know, I tried to do a little pawn stepping at a time, you know, teach a little here, lead a little small group, you know, do a little prayer here, do a little sermon here, a little team meeting here. And you know, more and more, and little step at a time, I'm learning to walk on water in the area of my career. And around 2018, the pastor shared with me the possibility of me becoming a pastor. And that is the biggest sea I got to go. I have my doubts. Financially, I have my doubts. And I just tell you one of my doubts is financially, I have my big doubts. Because I could have stayed in the boat, and I could have, you know, rocked my way back to Hong Kong and make big bucks and know, like, famous people and make a lot of money and become a successful secular musician. That's my other path I could go. And I was already halfway into it. But God called me through the pastors, through the church, and deep down inside, I know that if I don't step out into this pastoral role, I will look back in my life and I will tell myself, I should have done this. And so I did. I still have my doubts. Financially is one of the big doubts. You know, our council is very, very good to the staff. And they try as hard as possible to match the salary as competitive as possible to the jobs outside. But you understand this is still a church building. There's only so much you can make as a pastor. If your primary goal is to make money, you don't come to work to the church. So I have my doubts. And there are limitations financially, especially when I came out of school right away and I worked for the church. I don't have any, like, big Microsoft thing or like engineering thing to help me save up. I have my doubts. And my parents certainly, you know, they did the best they could, but they couldn't help me financially. And this sea gets real rough when you try to talk about marriage and get a house. The sea, the waves are just hitting you like left and right. You should just look at the waves and just sink and go back to your boat right now. And here's what I want to tell you about Jesus saving us and you know, a walking miracle, walking on water. As of 2020, right now, Fizz and I, we're in the process of planning our marriage. I haven't proposed yet. No. I will do that soon. Not the point. The point is I'm already planning for my marriage. We have a preliminary budget, and it's possible that we can achieve it if we save up for it. And that's amazing because we are thinking of an actual wedding ceremony with a banquet, you know, legit, you know, everything inside the ball, you know, everything is there. It's like, how is that possible for me? And not only that, we both committed a significant amount of money to the KMC pledging project. We have money for that. And not only that, we have some extra cash to go to fancy Japanese restaurants to eat, you know, the $5 piece of sashimi once in a while. We do. Where did that money come from? And not only that, every maybe once in a week or maybe twice in a week sometimes, we have like $7 bubble teas. Come on, $7 bubble teas. Where did that money come from? And not only that, we were able to invest in a one-room apartment in Surrey that will be complete in 2022. Where does that money come from? It comes from God. When you answer his call and you walk on the water, God is going to save you. That money comes from people in the church. I didn't ask them for it. They just said, here is some money. I know you need it. And they don't even know why I need it. They just gave it to me. And I want to let you know, God is faithful to his promise. God, when people respond to his calling, God is faithful to his promise. And I tell you all this, I want you to make sure you get this right. I tell you all this not because I'm special. Not because I'm extra spiritual. It's precisely the very opposite. 10 years ago, I was sitting in one of those benches. Well, it was technically in the bleachers here. 10 years ago, 2010. I'm not lying. You can ask any of the pastors, any of the leaders that see me grow up. 10 years ago, I was sitting there and I was sleeping by now. And I have this sort of spiritual alarm that tells me, oh, it's response on time or it's almost the end. I got to wake up soon. And then you sort of snooze a little bit and then you wake up. Oh, there's a communion. Okay. And then you go out. That was me. I kid you not. I am not extra spiritual. I'm not a special person. Becoming a pastor isn't even mildly close to my radar. Like, it's like far, far away in the galaxy. But God calls the ordinary people, calls the nobodies, the humble people. You know, that fisherman Peter? You know, that tax collector Matthew? You know, me? You know, you? He calls you to become a water walker, a living miracle. And he calls you because he wants you to encounter him. So my question for you today is this. Do you want to walk on water? Is there something that God is calling you to do and you have been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting on it? Do you want to experience God, and especially in different areas of your life? And do you want to experience him to the fullest in this life so that when the next comes, you won't have to tell yourself, I should have done this. And most importantly, do you want to live out God's purpose for you and start walking on the water every day? Let's pray together. God, the prayer that I make for this church is that mustard seed of faith. Mustard seed of faith. God, I pray that we have that mustard seed of faith. Because with a mustard seed of faith, you said we can move mountains. We can do miracles by your power. We can experience you. So we ask for that mustard seed of faith. And I think, God, I ask for even a bigger thing is that we will use that mustard seed of faith. Because if we have that mustard seed and we don't use it, we don't plant a tree with it, what is it going to become? What good is it? But God, I pray that we will use it. I pray that we'll use that mustard seed of faith daily in all areas of our life. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.